Would you have any idea how your brain works? There's a lot of interest these days in neuroplasticity, but it's a relatively new term, and I think for most of us, the way our brain works remains pretty much a mystery. But we do know that there's increasing numbers of young people with learning difficulties. So what's going on there? Someone who has been looking into this over many decades, not only from an academic point of view, but from a very personal point of view, is Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. She is the author of the book, The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. It's a bestseller and I think has changed the world for many, many people. And she's in Adelaide at the moment. Barbara, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. You've been visiting schools that have been using some of your methods to tackle learning difficulties. What's that been like?
Oh, it's a favorite part of my work is to actually meet students that are engaged in this work and to hear, you know, what they like about it, what they're excited about, and the changes. It's really transformative. I mean, yesterday I visited Marriottville Primary School here in Adelaide and met this little girl who a few months ago couldn't count to three because of her learning difficulties. And she's working on one of the cognitive exercises that changes the part of the brain that understands number. Last night there was an event at the Regal Theater. She was in attendance, this little, I think she was 10 years old, and she asked if she could count the people in the audience. There were 169 people. And this was a little girl that couldn't count to three a few months ago. Oh. So really profound. Another boy that got up and spoke when he started the program. In 10 minutes, he could write 15 words, and you couldn't recognize a single one of those words. They were not legible. We looked at his writing, and he's now writing pages, and every single word is legible. So the idea here is we're not teaching content, like we're not teaching that little girl how to count or we're not teaching that boy how to write. We're actually changing their brain that allows that kind of learning to go forward. So it's just, I was the very first student that went through this program. So I feel so connected with all of these students. Mm. And then we had breakfast this morning with a student that was in the program. She's now in her second year in uni in international relations. And, you know, she would probably not have graduated high school without this work. So it's really transformative and profound. And I'm thrilled that it's here in Adelaide. And there's an amazing parent group and advocacy group here. If people are interested on Facebook, they're Arrowsmith Advocacy for SA, and they would love other parents to join them. They're lobbying government. I mean, this work should be accessible.
This is the thing, though. You mentioned that you were the very first student to undertake this program. You also understand, I guess, the feelings of those who struggle to learn, because that's exactly where you started. Can you tell a bit about what that was like when you were going through school?
Yeah, so I was identified in grade one, and this was in the late 1950s, and there wasn't even a term learning difficulty. It didn't exist. So I was identified as having a mental block, and one of my problems was comprehension, so I actually thought I had a wooden cube in my head.
Which, took things literally.
Yeah, I did take things literally, which, I mean, I didn't have a piece of wood, I learned in my head, but I had blockages in parts of my brain, but I feel like I was given a life sentence in grade one. I overheard my teacher tell my mother, don't have high expectations for your daughter. She's going to struggle all the way through school. Don't expect much of her. So
you're born with it, in a sense.
I was born with it, yes. And my parents identified before I went to school. My mother knew there were problems when I was three or four, which a lot of parents recognize very early. And so school was a struggle. Like, I can't remember a single day of joy going to school. You know, and the school was right across the street from my house, so I could look out the window of my living room and see it. And I knew every day that when I walked out of my house to go to school, that it was going to be a challenge. It was going to be a struggle. I had meltdowns, tears. I actually attempted suicide at age 13 just because of the mental health stresses. I mean, in Canada, grade nine is high school. And I was now in grade eight, and I couldn't imagine how I could handle high school with multiple subjects and the demands. So in a sense, my grade one teacher was right, that all of my schooling was going to be an incredible struggle. And I was very lucky. My mother had won an award in the province of Ontario for a contribution to education. So she was determined her daughter was going to learn, and she taught me how to read and how to write. But the fundamental learning difficulty was still there. And my father was a scientist and an inventor, and he believed that if there's a problem and no solution, it's your responsibility to find a solution. And he said, don't be limited by conventional wisdom. If the rest of the world says you can't do it, he said, don't let that stop you. This is how science goes forward. So I feel like I was set on a quest as a young child to try to figure out what was going on and what could I do about it. And eventually I came across two lines of research that changed my life and became the beginning of this work.
So when we talk about learning difficulties, because you went off to do your own research, looked at neurological research and came to your own conclusion about what could change that. But what I struggle to understand is, was your learning difficulty involving reading? Because to get that knowledge required a whole lot of effort and a whole lot of reading, presumably.
It did. I kind of joke that I became a workaholic in grade one because I would come home at lunch from school. My mother would give me flashcards. I'd come home after school. She'd give me flashcards. So I did learn how to read, but with heroic effort. And that's the experience of students with learning difficulties is you have to work sometimes 100 times harder than other children, and you don't always get the same results or the same rewards or outcomes. I was really determined. I mean, I did have good executive functioning, kind of that drive. So I was incredibly driven, whereas maybe somebody else would have given up. So it might take me 100 times to read a page to understand it, but I would read it that 100 times, and then I would draw pictures. So I would try to use my right hemisphere to translate language into nonverbal interpretation. So, and I was desperate. At this point I was 25, 26, still couldn't tell time. I couldn't read a clock. I couldn't understand what people were saying to me. I couldn't be part of human discourse or conversation. So I was desperate, and I figured I have to do something.
And so what did you learn that made you realize what the key to all of this was?
So in August of 1977, someone handed me Luria's book, The Man with the Shattered World, and it told the story of a Russian soldier who had a very localized head wound after World War II. And this book was the soldier's journal describing all of his problems, and then Luria explaining what was going on in his brain. Luria was a brilliant Russian neuropsychologist. And as I read this man's journal, I thought, we're experiencing the same problem. He talked about meaning disappearing into a fog or a mist. My journal, I was saying, you know, I live in a fog. Everything is unclear and disappears. Before his injury, he could do fractions. Afterwards, he couldn't. I had never been able to do fractions. He couldn't tell time after his injury. I still couldn't tell time. So now I knew my problem was part of my brain. And to solve a problem, you have to understand the nature. And then at the same time, I was reading Rosenzweig's work out of Berkeley, who was looking at neuroplasticity with rats and finding stimulation led to physiological and functional changes in their brain. They became better at learning mazes. And he argued stimulation can change your brain physiologically, which leads to better learning, which is this idea of neuroplasticity. So I figured if rats have neuroplasticity, surely humans must have neuroplasticity. And at this point, this was 1977, all of my professors in graduate school said I was crazy. This is impossible. There is no human neuroplasticity. We know it doesn't exist. But I thought about what my father said. You know, if the world tells you you can't do it, don't listen to them. I'm desperate. I don't see a future for myself. So I put the two lines of research together and started developing cognitive exercises to work three different parts of my brain because I had multiple learning difficulties and saw the change, which was profound, where I went from, you know, reading something 100 times and not being sure if I understood it to being able to read it once and understand it. And it was so much more efficient, right? And now I had free time, you know, and I could listen to conversations. I would not be having this conversation with you because you would ask me a question and I would play it over in my head and I might have to play it over 50 times to figure out, do I really understand what you're saying?
Yes.
And by the time I figured it out, you wouldn't have waited for me to answer. I became part of human discourse. It was so profound. I started having social relations, which I had never had before because I didn't understand people. So I thought, when I saw these changes, I said, I want to take this out into the world to help other people that have the same kind of problems. And not everybody had the same difficulties I did. So I worked with people to develop a range of different programs. So we have programs for 19 different functions.
I'm talking with Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. She's the author of The Woman Who Changed Her Brain, detailing this incredible journey she's been on to develop this program. Now, when you developed this program, the idea was that it needed to be stimulating. But how did you know what to do that would create these neuroplasticity changes?
So I deeply dived into Luria's books, like every book that I could get that was translated into English from Russian, you know, with colored highlighters and diagrams. And he talked about somebody who has the difficulty I have can't process relationships, so they can't tell time, and I couldn't tell time.
And when you say relationships, you mean the relationship of the one hand against the other?
The other hand, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Or things like before and after.
Anything. So the comparing of things
exactly.
Or cause and effect, those sort of things.
There was no cause and effect in my world, no insight. So I thought, I have to force my brain to process relationships, like to see connections between things. So how can I do that? I thought, force my brain to tell time.
So kind of practice it.
It was practice it. It is. It's work that part of your brain over and over and over again. Just like, you know, physiotherapy. If you've got damage in a specific muscle, you're going to exercise that muscle with a physiotherapist. So this is, you know, find the task that's going to exercise that part of your brain.
And so almost kicking that part of your brain into gear.
It is exactly like that. And the idea was, I mean, I didn't know if it was going to work, but I thought, I need to try. And so that's what I did over and over and over and over again. You know, drawing clocks, using flashcards, you know, telling time, and eventually I got really fast and accurate, and I could read a clock. And then I realized, okay, I'm not feeling change in my brain or the way I understand my world. So added another hand to drive complexity, make it like, you know, like lifting weights. So add another 5 pounds, add another hand. And then I got to what I call four hands. So I was processing four relationships simultaneously. That's when I got my breakthrough. And it was like, blinders came off, the fog lifted. I could see the world. I could understand the world. I went back and taught myself all of mathematics from grade one right up to college and understood it.
So you learned how to tell time, but in learning how to tell time, you also developed the ability to do other relationship issues. So it wasn't just about learning time.
Exactly. None of the exercises are about the thing in and of itself. It's finding a window into stimulating that part of the brain. And my work, I found certain windows in to stimulate brain. I mean, there are probably multiple ways to do that.
And so if we talk about people who have learning difficulties now, they may have some of the ones you have, but they may have very different ones too, presumably.
Exactly. So, I mean, I had a photographic visual memory. So I was really strong there. We work with students that don't have a visual memory. So, you know, if they close their eyes and try to see the word cat on a blackboard in their mind's eye, they can't. It's just like they see a blank screen. So they struggle with reading, with spelling, word recognition. We have a program for that where we use all sorts of weird computer-like languages.
And you didn't have that issue.
I didn't have that issue.
But in your knowledge of what the brain and how the brain parts work, you could work out a program to stimulate that part of the brain.
Absolutely. And that's how this work is developed is, you know, not everybody had the same difficulties I had. And, you know, I had very good auditory memory too. I memorized everything. We have programs for people that have poor auditory memory. You know, the child that comes home and knows they had homework, but they don't remember what it is. Or the person that goes to the grocery store, they know they were supposed to buy 5 things, but they can't remember what all those things are. So I was good there, but we now have programs to help people with that difficulty.
Barbara, it's fascinating to talk with you. Before we let you go, obviously these programs have been out in the children, young people have been using them, probably adults as well, over the last 40 years since you've developed them. What sort of results are you seeing?
To me, the really profound results are talking to the individuals and seeing what's changed in their life.
At Merrittville Primary.
Exactly. Yeah. But we're doing lots of research. So we're doing research, you know, we've got studies across 6 universities, 19 schools, 4 countries, different research designs. We're actually now seeing the changes in the brains of students going through this program, which is really fascinating. What we're seeing is, which I said 40 years ago I thought was happening, that there are parts of the brain that are not properly connected, they're underconnected, and there are parts of the brain that are hyperconnected. They're working really, really hard to try to do the job of these underfunctioning areas, but they can't. So again, it's really inefficient, just like the experience of the student with learning difficulties in the class, working really hard but not getting the results. What we're seeing as the students go through the program is those underconnected areas start to strengthen in their connection and the hyperconnected areas can relax. So the brain starts to work really efficiently to process information. And we're seeing academic changes, we're seeing cognitive changes, and we're seeing social emotional well-being changes and reduction in cortisol, reduction in stress. To me, it's really profound. And this is, we need to put the brain in the equation of education.
It's been fascinating to talk with you. Thank you for joining us today. Barbara Arrowsmith-Young is my guest, and she's the author of The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. Just before we go, if you've got that Facebook address for parents or those who might like to connect again in relation to these programs.
Yes, so it's Arrowsmith Advocacy for SA.
Thank you so much, Barbara Arrowsmith-Young.